I'm always happy to have Lorraine Jordan on the show. It's just always a lot of fun for me. I've made this comment before. Talking to Lorraine Jordan for me personally is like talking to a family member. And we've gone through that before, and my family's down south, and talking to you, and they all played music in the farmhouse at night. And that's absolute truth. And talking to you makes me feel like I'm back in that area. But anyway, welcome so much, Lorraine Jordan.
Well, it probably has a lot to do with this old accent here I got.
Well, it might be, but I'm always happy to have you on the show. And I will tell you this, too, and I want to talk about the opening song that the audience just heard, Living Like I'm Dying. But if you remember the last time we talked, we were trying to get in a session in between NFL playoff games.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm thinking right now, that's not going to be a problem for a while.
No, I hadn't had any football yet. I miss football.
It's my
favorite Sunday passions.
I know.
But I appreciate you playing off Living Like I'm Dying, because that song is a song that my mom and I wrote. And this has been a hard year for me, because I lost my mother. My mother was 86 years old. And she went about everywhere I went, and I like to tell the story that if she'd bring me a birthday cake out to a bluegrass festival in the hot of the day.
No kidding.
Just supporting me so much, and, it's not like, down where I'm from, family is really, really important,
yeah.
And, I talk to my parents every day, and I visit with them, and, I really miss her, and it's just, I try to think about the good times, and this particular song that you played, she and I were visiting down at the beach. They live down on the beach of North Carolina, the ocean. And she said, I'll play my guitar. And she wanted me to do something else. And she said, well, how long are you going to be doing that? What are you going to be? And I said, no, I'm going to write a song right now, Mom. And she says, well, what are you writing it about? And I don't know what it was, but I told her. And she said, why don't you write one about yourself and call it Living Like I'm Dying? She said, you never stop.
Well, that's true. It's interesting, too. There's a and your mother's name was Janice, correct?
It was,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so there's a story that I want to develop a little more about that song and then what may be coming after it. But it's, when you listen to it now and thinking about when you wrote it with your mother's inspiration, if you will, or it's almost like there's a lot of people in the country right now with what we're going through where, there are people who might take on that attitude in a negative sense, that they're just kind of getting through the day. It's a positive song. But it's funny, when you listen to it now, you think it could have been written last month.
Well, yeah, because you don't know what's going on nowadays.
Nope.
And that's how Mom was with me. I think you know me pretty well, and I have about five businesses that I run outside
right.
of my bluegrass business, and I just don't slow down. I just don't ever take the time just to sit around and do nothing. I'm not a couch person. And she just said, you got to slow down. It's all going to pass you by. And I'm like, Mom, I'll slow down when my time comes to the end, because I want to get everything out of life I possibly can.
You want to get it all. Isn't that nice? And then did she before she passed away, which was last,
July,
last summer?
17th.
Last summer, yeah, July. Did she hear the song?
Oh, yes, she did. I mean, we actually were playing it on stage, and I would always say, my mom and I wrote this song because, she came up with the title, and she told me, I asked her, why did she say that? And then she told me why she said that. She said, because you never slow down, you're always moving too fast, you're not taking time to smell the flowers. And so I used a lot of what she said in the song. And we would do it on stage, and I would always say, this is all my mom and I wrote, and my mom is so funny. People think I get my humor from my dad, because he's been a DJ before, and he's MC, but no, I don't. My mom would be in the audience, and she would say, well, when do I get my royalty check? And I was like, well, I'll give you half of mine.
That's what I was going to say. I didn't want to say that. See, you can have half of everything I get off of it. So.
Yeah, but it's funny. Can I share one little story?
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
Really funny.
Oh, sure.
I've shared this before, and it's a funny story about my mom. I think a lot of people know I have Maltese dogs. They're those little white mm-hmm. dogs, the fluffy head. Well, I named my last one I had, I named him J.D. Crow.
I remember you told me that.
Yeah, because his hair is just all white, white as snow. And it seemed like, you know, my husband plays the banjo and the dobro, and when he would get the dobro out, you know, JD would just go run. He didn't even want to be around it. But when he would get the banjo out, he wanted to be right under his feet. So I thought it was, hey, this is perfect right here. And, well, I take him on the bus with me on a lot of road trips, and Mama would go with me once in a while. And I have a bottom bunk, and we didn't have enough bunks for guests, so I would give Mom my bunk when she traveled with us. And we were out at a festival, and I was doing the sales table right outside the door of the bus. We had the table set up. Of course, a lot of people had come to buy CDs and all. Well, Mom said she was going to go take a nap in the bunk. Well, JD Crow, the dog, he always would jump in the bunk with me when I napped, and, you know, he'd take a nap too. So he decided he was going to take a nap with Mom. So he jumps in the bunk, and I guess she put him out a couple of times, you know, because she really, Mom's not the type that would want a dog in the bunk with her. And then finally she couldn't get him out of the bunk, so she came out there to the bus. She opened up the door. We're at the sales table. As loud as she could possibly say it, she said, "Lorraine, come in here and get J.D. Crow out of my bed." And my gosh, that festival weekend, oh, it was the funniest thing. Everybody coming up to me about that.
And at a bluegrass festival, they're all going to know who J.D. Crow is without necessarily knowing you named your dog that. So that's not a name that's going to fall on deaf ears. If it's put out there loud enough to hear it, you're going to get some reaction to that.
I got a lot of reaction. And when we got up on the stage, you know, I had to explain to everybody. I said, "Listen, my name, my Maltese, is J.D. Crow. My mother is not sleeping with J.D. Crow." And we even called J.D. And he knew about my dog. He knew he had a namesake. And I said, "Listen, if you hear any rumors," he said, "I already heard about it."
That's a great story. I love that.
It is.
I love that. And for people listening, if anyone listening has not been to a bluegrass festival, first of all, you need to go. If you're listening to this program, you probably have. But I always want to let people know that when Lorraine Jordan talks about having the table set up, that's a beautiful thing about bluegrass festivals, that the artist will set up a table of merchandise or CDs or whatever either near the concert stage or near where they are, or in this case you're near your bus, and you can go up and meet them and talk to them and buy things from them.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I don't see in any other kind of music. I don't see that happen anywhere. That's such a very real personal thing that, other than bluegrass people, I don't know that anybody does that from the artist side. I mean, it doesn't happen in any other form of music that I'm aware of.
No, it doesn't. And another thing that doesn't happen either is a lot of times the bluegrass bands will actually go sit out in the audience with the audience and watch other bands because we're all friends.
Yeah.
And I remember I was out watching a band one time, and I got my chair and I put it out there, and I was excited. I'm a big old Seldom Seen fan, so I wanted to watch them, and got my chair and I got all excited, and everybody coming around me, you know, talking, and which I love, you know, mingling and this and that. I mean, but it was like they were like, "What are you doing out here?" And I'm like, "Well, I want to watch the Seldom Seen, just like you. Yeah. I'm a big fan too."
Be quiet, I'm listening. that's another great thing about it is that although into the audience's mind, we just assume that you guys know each other all the time. Now, you might, and you could be a fan of a band, but because your travel schedules are such, you may only see them coming and going, and you may see them on the stage, depending on what part of the country you're from. You may be really good friends, but you're just like what you're describing is just like what I would go through. This is a band that I want to see, and they're here, and I want to hear them. But it's not like you guys sit around because you're busy. When everything's open, not like now, when you're on tour, you're always going, and you may pass the Seldom Seen. You may see him on stage, and you may see him leaving as you're coming into a place, depending on what day you're set to play. So it's an odd dynamic, and I think it's great that the artists themselves not only have such close contact with the fans, which is unparalleled. There's nothing like that in music anywhere.
You're right. That's the way it usually is. As a matter of fact, so I can see Steve Dillon. I'm sitting on my front porch. I can see Steve Dillon's house from here.
Oh, really?
And I think it's so funny. You know, he and I'll go play the same festivals, and they'll be driving in, we'll be leaving, or we'll be leaving, and they'll be driving in. And I'll see, when I get back home, I'll see Steve, and he'll say, "Well, I saw you back into your bus," and I said, "Isn't that funny that we go to the same places, but we really don't see each other when we get back home?"
Yeah, it's the most incredible thing about bluegrass music is always was, I think always will be once we get it back on, the road and the venues open up, it's still that personal touch that the audience and the fans feel connected to players like Lorraine Jordan and the entire band. And there is a connection. I think there's – I don't know if you've ever played different kind of music, Lorraine, where you're in a different setting. I doubt it. Maybe you have. But I don't think there's that connection with any other type of music being performed live. It's not in jazz. It's not in rock and roll. It's not – this doesn't exist.
No, I'm sure it's not. I mean, maybe gospel some to a point. But
oh, that could be.
No, you're right. I mean, I'm a big fan of CCR, you know, old days, John Fogerty, people like that, yeah. And I like that kind of music. But no, you can't get near them.
No, they go out the back door, and that's just the way it is. It's just the way it is. Well, let's talk more about. It was nice. Okay, now this tune that we just discussed a little bit before I got sidetracked on some other issues with just bluegrass in general. The tune "Living Like I'm Dying." I do see in the notes that it may be used in a documentary or maybe the theme of a documentary. Is that accurate?
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you asked about that. Yes, North Carolina is doing a documentary on my music life, and I'm really excited about it. I don't know that it'll be shown in other states, but it'll be shown on North Carolina television here, and maybe then we'll get a copy and put on the website or something.
Yeah, but sure.
I think... I don't know the fact that I'm a woman. I've been in the music a long time. I started the Daughters of Bluegrass, and that was an inspiration that Gina Brett and I had.
Sure, I remember.
Who lives here in my area also. So that was one thing that they were really excited about. And then I took a chance on the Truegrass song. Announcing to the world that I support traditional music and want to support the legends and keep their legacy alive, and I why can't traditional music stay around,
yeah.
And so I took a chance on that, and then I've got the country grass where I went and recorded with 12 Grand Ole Opry stars, like Lee Greenwood and John Anderson, T.G. Shepherd, Eddie Raven, people like that, and put that out with the country grass, and then I just got finished doing the patriotic grass with all military songs, so. And then I've got the coffee house here, Lorraine's Coffee House and Music, and they just thought I had a lot going on, and I'd done a lot of, not just gone out and played and came home, but, I had started some things that were novelty things, and so they asked me about doing a documentary, and we got into it, and it features all of those things that we just talked about, and I just kind of, ties it to my childhood and the childhood that I had growing up, and up till now.
Well, that'd be great. If you just tuned in, I'm talking to Lorraine Jordan of Lorraine Jordan and Carolina Road. And the topic is, one of the topics we talk about, it, or whatever we want, is their brand new album, Bill Monroe's Old Mandolin, which is on Pinecastle. Great album. There's 12 cuts on it. We talked at length about, we just were finishing up a little bit, discussion of Living Like I'm Dying and just the great sentiment of that, and it may be used to discuss other things. I know, Lorraine, you're always busy. I see you always with the coffee house. I see you on Facebook. I see you having events going on and concerts down there. If people miss Lorraine Jordan and Carolina Road, and they probably will, you pop up on all media and do little concerts every once. I think there might have been one last night.
Yeah, we had our CD release party last night online. We were allowed to have 20 people inside to space them out, and then we had a drive-by CD release party, and we had it Friday and Saturday night. It was online at Lorraine's Coffee House of Music and also Lorraine Jordan Carolina Road's Facebook, and we actually had 88 people come by and drive by and get CDs.
No
and
kidding.
Then the ones inside, and we sold a lot of the T-shirts. We've got a good-looking T-shirt with the whole mandolin on it.
Oh, that's a great picture on the front. I hope it's sort of like that.
It is. It's exactly like that.
Oh, that's a great picture.
So we've got, we had really good sales, and I was like thinking, wow, we're going to have a CD out, and how are we going to get it to anybody? But this worked out perfect because, we're here in Raleigh, North Carolina, and there's a lot of bluegrass in Raleigh, and so people really came out, and they really supported what we did.
Well, that's great. I'm glad they did. I'm glad to have a chance to talk about it so soon after its release. We really only talked about one song. Of course, there's the title cut, which I want to talk about a little bit. But there are 12 songs. I have you singing lead on three of the tunes, including the one you wrote with your mother, Janice. Is that accurate? I'm trying to read my notes.
Yeah,
here.
I think I'm singing lead on Mama, Can You Hear the Train, and I'm singing lead on Ready for the Times to Get Better.
Yeah, well, Mama, Can You, or yeah, Can You Hear the Train? That's a nice. It's not a really furious tempo, but it's a nice uptick tempo for a bluegrass band, and it just tells a great story. I think trains and bluegrass go together. If you can give us a little fill-in on that, we'll talk about a few other songs.
Yeah, I just I wrote that many years ago, and we had never put it out. The Daughters of Bluegrass put that out on their first CD, the one that was the IBMA recording event of the year. But I never put it out as a band, and I always liked that song. And I tried to write it to sound like a train. And when we do, Randy Graham sings tenor with me on it, and mm-hmm. I always find these great guys that can tenor to me because my voice is pretty low for a female.
Right.
And so he sang all the way through with me, and you know we got on the end. You know, Mama, Can You Hear That Train Too? You know, we do the toot like a train.
Yeah.
And then right into that song, you know, we usually on stage go out with that and go and put Orange Blossom Special in there.
Oh, that's perfect. Oh, yeah, that's a great connector there. That's great. Oh, that's good. Well, I haven't seen that live. I'll be honest with you. I haven't seen you do that live, but look for that.
No, you can go to the online city concert we had Friday and Saturday night. If you go to if you go to LorrainesCoffeeHouse.com, it says Lorraine's Jukebox, and all the bands that have ever played there that we videoed are archived, and you can push on any band you want to watch.
Oh, nice.
And watch it for free.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. We always need to get the music out there, even if the artist can't travel, the music has to be out there because the artists have to keep producing. For your creativity, you still want to play. You would love to have the audience all the time because that, I think, that feedback is there's nothing like it. But if we can just keep getting the music out, like what you're talking about now with the cafe and that's amazing. 88 people drove by to pick up CDs. That's incredible.
Well, you got to remember, I was in my hometown, though.
Well, that's true.
But there's a lot of bluegrass here. Garner and Raleigh both here together, and Steve Dillon and I live here in Garner, and Raleigh's 7 miles away. But we got Pinecone around here too, and they really helped us push it. And so it was pretty amazing, you know, that what happened. And I think more bands could maybe try this.
Hey, I think they should try everything they can. I mean, and some of them are getting better at doing those type of concerts, and it sounds like you've got it down. I watched part of it last night because I knew we were going to talk today. But
thank you.
I think that's the way you have to do it, and bands are going to have to innovate in order to make up for the gap right now. I don't know when the gap is going to be gone, but for now, you're finding a way to make it work, and others can too also. On the album, Bill Monroe's Old Man, which is on Pinecastle. Again, I remind people who just tuned in, I'm talking to Lorraine Jordan, which I always love to do. You have a couple classics. You got Sally Ann, which is done impeccably, and then you close out the album with Rolling in My Sweet Baby's Arms, which is so good that you do those things that everybody expects. Everybody wants those sort of classic tunes to pop up every once in a while, and you do them so well. You do them so well.
Well, you've got to add some of those. You really do. And you know, we always let Ben Green pick out our instrumental, and it's like when he picked out Last Date. It was a great song for him. Ben Green's my banjo player.
He's a great player.
He has been with me for 15 years. That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, he's a great player.
He's played with Lost and Found and James King and Junior Sis and David Parmley and came with me 15 years ago, and he stayed, and I said, well, you must like working for a woman. Mm-hmm. He said, I don't know what it is. But anyway, he's just such a terrific person and instrumentalist, and my fiddle player, Matt Hooper, who has been with me now, he's off and on. He's been with me for a long time because he lives here in the same town, but he finally decided he was going to go out on the road with us. He went with Don Rigsby a little while and got the bug bit. So he's been with us a couple of years now, and they're such great musicians that, you know, I just Rolling Sweet Baby's Arms was fit them perfect, and they picked their own instrumental. I thought they did a great job.
They did, and I think, and I should have checked before. I think I've got a CD that I bought from Ben, banjo playing CD.
He's got two.
I know. I have one or two from him because I should probably check into my media library before I ask that. But I'm sure I did. I bought it from him. Because I think he was with, I might have seen him do a date with, it might have been Third Time Out. but it might have just been one. It might have just been one hookup up here in Northern Kentucky. It's a band like that, a nice band. I mean, they did a great job with them, but I just don't remember which one it was.
Well, he's been around for a while. He's given 53 years to playing professional banjo.
Oh man, he's a good one, and they're good tunes they picked out. This tune kind of tickles me, Bluegrass Band. And when I'm reading through the, after I listen to it, I go back and I look. The origin of this tune is surprising to me. It's Conway Twitty and Ronnie Reno. And I'm thinking, where has that song been?
Well, I've been wondering that myself, because that's a song we do on stage off and on, and people really like it. And, you know, I don't think anybody's really recorded it much in bluegrass. It needed to be. And so, you know, we thought, hey, we need to do this. Put it out.
It's a good one. It's good, and it does. I mean, I don't know the date that it was written, but it could have been written recently, because of, you know, bluegrass is always changing, which I think is ultimately good for everybody. But I just thought that the tune, when I finally went back and looked through the notes, I thought, well, that's older than I thought.
Yeah, it is. I know Ronnie Reno, when he was playing with Conway Twitty, I remember they did that song, Country Style, and it kind of tells the story about, you know, bluegrass and country, you know, kind of the connection. You know, they used to be married. It used to be the same thing.
Yeah.
And then they ventured off, but well, I think I remember them telling that.
Yeah, well, there was only one in what you're talking about, I think, is if we can all flash back to record stores. There used to be, which we can't find those anymore. I mean, records before CDs. There were placards for genres, and at some point, I don't know who did it. I think it was probably a label executive or someone involved in that. They decided to name them two different things. There's bluegrass used to be writing with country music, and then they decided to switch them up and put them in separate things. I guess because they thought they could. It had to be driven by the fact they thought they could sell more, but you're right, they're really all the same thing, all blended together.
That's what that song says. And it features the bass a lot. You know, it's a good song for the bass player. And I've got a new bass player right now. I used Jason Moore for a long time. Sideline would use him, and we would use him, and we would share him. But then Sideline, the little side band Steve was going to put together, mm-hmm. that was going to play just a few jobs a year.
Yeah, they wound up full-time.
Probably playing more than anybody, mm-hmm. so we couldn't share Jason anymore. But Kevin Lamb, I've got a guy. I'm so blessed to get local guys that can play so well. And this is his first national band. He was playing with Garrett Newton Band and he took my place when I played bass with Garrett Newton. And he just, you know, I asked him. I said, you know, we'd really like to have you come on board with us if you ever have any interest, and he has.
It's a good band. You have an unending source there, right in that part of the country where you can hopefully fill in. There's always somebody that can help you out. Let's talk a little bit about. I want you to introduce to the audience off of this Bill Monroe's Old Mandolin CD. I want you to introduce a tune. They call it Bluegrass, and we'll play that, and I'll come back and talk to you. But do a little build up for that so they know what's coming.
Sure. Well, you know, about every song that we've had that's made it up the charts to number one has been about Kentucky. I kid you not.
I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that, too, especially now that I got a guy who's lived in Kentucky for so long in the band, Randy Graham. you know, I mean, I guess this is his retirement band. I don't know. He's been around forever, but he moved to North Carolina, and he wasn't playing with anybody, and I told him, I said, listen, if you want to jump on in here with us, you know, six is not a crowd to us, so his singing is so awesome.
Oh, yeah.
So we put Randy in there with us. It gives me an opportunity to sing some lead, not all tenor. And we this song, it's actually was written by a local DJ here named
Larry Nixon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You probably know Larry.
Mm-hmm.
And Larry and I, we get together and pick. He likes mandolins. He builds mandolins. We get together and talk and pick. And he was, when we put out the Bill Monroe's Old Mandolin, he said, don't you think that people are going to get upset that you're featuring the mandolin so much, and don't you need a banjo tune? And I was like, well, there's a lot of stories about the banjo, and there are not many about the mandolin. And he was joking around with me, and he said, I'm going to write you one. And he did write the words, and my banjo player, Ben Green, oh, my gosh, he was so spectacular on this. He put the Earl Scruggs tuning song in the beginning.
Yep, yep.
Mm-hmm. And then he took some of Earl Scruggs' favorite songs, most popular songs, and put all through the song. And I think that's what's really, nothing against Larry's words. They're great. But I think what's making this song is the banjo songs that are in there.
And if you're a banjo player, which I do at times.
Yes, you do.
You can pick them out. You can say, oh, I know what that is. I know what that is. So now let's introduce that and let people hear that for themselves. I'll come back and talk to Lorraine Jordan some more about this new album and whatever else comes up. So now you're going to hear They Call It Bluegrass, as Lorraine Jordan just explained so well. We're going to play that, and we'll be right back just a second. Well, I hope you caught every cut in there that Ben put in, and the words are great. But I remember when I first heard the song, I kept thinking, "Oh yeah, I play that. I know what that's from. It's a great tune." And Ben is one of the I'll say this, Lorraine. I think he's one of the best banjo players that nobody really seems to. It's not fair to say that, but is he the best banjo player that nobody knows that much about?
I think so.
You know what I mean? I don't mean to degrade him because I know him, and I've seen him, and I've talked to him, but I'm just thinking to the general public.
He's never gotten the recognition he deserves. 2015, Stigma gave him Traditional Banjo Player of the Year because we had the number one song, That's Kentucky, and that song did so well, and it helped me get female vocalists, and we got Song of the Year. But outside of that, he's not been recognized that much, and I don't know. I think it might have a lot to do with his personality. Ben doesn't really talk a lot.
No.
He's pretty quiet. He pretty much stays in the background. He just comes to the band. He comes on stage. He's the first one behind stage. He'll get back there an hour early. He gets ready, and he does his job.
He lays it down.
That's what he does. He's just, you know, whatever. He says, I'm just a side man. I'm just a banjo player. He's a big part of my band.
I'm glad he is a banjo player. I'll tell you that right now. So the rest of the album, we talked about a couple of the songs. This is a song that kind of makes me smile. Well, a lot of them do, but Thank God for Kids.
Yes, we thought that I've got a singer right now. I've got a new singer. Tommy Long moved on, and I was wondering how are we going to do these songs, and it just so happened that the guy that was singing lead vocals for Garrett Newton, Alan Dyer, he and I had played together with Garrett for 3 years, and our blend had gotten so tight together, and he had grown to be such a great singer, and I just just needed somebody, and I asked him to join up with us, and we're playing a little bit more than Garrett is, and so he came on board, but he's just spectacular. He can sing a country classic, or he can sing a bluegrass song, and I just love his voice, and I just thought. You know, we needed a pretty song. We needed a song that people could relate to, and I thought it was a good feeling song.
It is a great feeling song. And let me say this, too, about Lorraine while I got you on the phone, and if this embarrasses you, just ignore it. Lorraine Jordan does such a great job of pulling in other voices, and even though it's the name of the band is Lorraine Jordan and Carolina Road, I think I made the mention that there's three tunes that you play. You don't have to sing every song. You bring in the best people to sing the song the best way it should be interpreted within the band, and you'll sing backup. You'll do whatever's best. You'll sing lead when it's obviously a special song, Living Like I'm Dying, that you and your mother put together. But Lorraine Jordan has a band concept. This is what I'll say. You have a band concept. You have a lot of great musicians. We've talked about some of them. And great singers. And you and the best singer goes forward as the lead. If that's required, it isn't. But what will get the best sound is you find the best singer for the song, I think.
That's exactly right. I mean, we're doing a gospel CD right now, and Randy Graham's singing about every song on the gospel CD, and I'm doing all the tenor. It's, to me, you know, I mean, and I appreciate what you just said, by the way, because I've had other DJs ask me, they say, well, why are you not singing all the songs, or most of the songs, you're the band leader? And I said, listen, I always taught at Carolina Road, and then Tom T and Dixie Hall talked me into putting my name in front of it. And because I was MCing, and I was, you know, I'm of course I am behind the band.
If Tom and Dixie say something, do it.
That's right. And she gave me the title Lady of Tradition also.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That's where that came from, because, you know, we got to be really good friends with the Daughters of Bluegrass. So I went ahead and did it, and it wasn't really what I wanted to do, but because I feel my band, they're just as important. Each one is just as important as the other. I don't care if you're the bass player in the back or if you're, you know, Randy Graham, who's been around forever. You're just as important. And to me, a traditional band, which is what we consider ourselves, you know, I mean, I think a lot of the traditional songs were sung by males, and you know, and that's just, I've got some good male singers,
yes,
and I'm not going to hog the whole set and the whole CD.
I think it's great. I think it works great. It's something I've always wanted to talk to you about. I don't think we did that before, but
we
I
did
wanted
not.
No, but now we are, so we can write that off the list. It may come back again, but at least we've touched on it this time. But I think that's a good leader of a band.
I appreciate you giving me the respect for that, because I've always thought that it was the right thing to do. And yes, it's my band, and yes, I back the band, and I'm the band leader, but, you know, this is a team, and I got some good singers in this band.
Well, you absolutely do. I want to talk, this always amazes me when I look at who writes songs, and I've told you how I do this. It's just my peculiar. I listen, and then I go back and read who wrote what and who did what. I'm always surprised that Michael Martin Murphy shows up in bluegrass albums.
He's got some good songs.
He does, and he's done bluegrass, so Cherokee Fiddle on the album is one of his, but it's amazing how many tunes that he wrote. Last Train to Clarksville, not thinking it would ever be a bluegrass tune, but it has become. That was made, I guess, recorded by the Monkees. I think that set him in the position where he could do whatever he wanted to, I think is what happened. But yeah, he's always writing these songs that wind up in bluegrass albums and bands, and they sound great.
Well, this particular one has wound up on two brand new CDs. Larry Cordell just put it out also.
Oh, is that right?
And we had no idea that each of us was putting it out. I mean, bands don't talk about what they're going to put on their projects.
No.
And when I did find out, I said, well, he's going to single it. I said, well, you go ahead and single it. I said, because we're just going to, you know, put it on the CD as a filler. And Michael has come and played the Coffee House before.
Oh, okay.
And that's how I got to know him. And when he was here, you know, he wanted my bluegrass band, Carolina Road, to back him up on some songs. And so we learned Carolina and the Pines and Cherokee Fiddle.
Wildfire. Did you learn Wildfire?
We did learn Wildfire, but I'll tell you now, that's a song that it's made for the Manland a little bit.
Yeah.
So we did learn Wildfire, and we learned a lot of them, and then we played them. We had to work really hard to learn them for the set. And I said, let's pick out one of those Michael Martin Murphy songs, and let's put it on the CD and record it. And everybody said, let's do Cherokee Fiddle, and I think it just features the fiddle player wonderfully.
Yeah, oh, it's great. It's great. All those different sources, that's always amazing to me that bluegrass bands pull from so many different sources, because it depends on the person who's trying to pull things in and members of the band, but it's always amazing to me where, like you have Boogie Grass Band. I don't know. I didn't know it. I did sort of wouldn't have guessed it was Conway Twitty and Ronnie. You find that, you pull it in, you pull in this Michael Martin tune, and it's great. I mean, it works great. This helps the whole album out, and you can just, I like to go back and read, and I'm always impressed with the breadth of what you're doing and on the sources that you're pulling in. It's a very pleasant thing to know that you put that much thought into it. And then you write them and you sing them when they fit you. But the whole band concept, Carolina Road, and on this new album, Bill Monroe's Old Manland on Pinecastle, it's a perfect example of what you do best.
I think it is, too. It's a song that it tells a great story. It tells the night of Ricky Skaggs being inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame. That they gave him the old lore, Bill Monroe, Manland. Took it out of the glass case. I never thought I'd see that done.
No.
Took it out and handed it to him, and he played it. He played a tune on it, and he held it like a Bible, and he smelled it, and he kissed it. And I mean, it was just, I mean, that meant a lot to that man to hold that Manland. And it would have to me, too, because I've looked at it in the glass case over in the Country Music Hall of Fame Museum. You know, I just stared at it for years, and I want to make sure that I mention that Gibson Custom Instrument Shop in Nashville, Tennessee, they, when they heard the song, they said, Lorraine, you got to have a Hall of Fame Bill Monroe mandolin. And I said, yeah, you're going to get it out of the glass case again? And and they said, no, but we're going to build you one.
Oh, nice.
And I am now playing a exact copy of Bill Monroe's Old Mandolin that's in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, that's great. It's a great tune. So we will I've enjoyed this so much, Lorraine. I always like talking to you about whatever comes up. I'm not real scheduled. I just kind of let things flow because I enjoy doing this and I enjoy talking to you. But what we're going to do, so thanks for your time, it's my way of saying that. What we're going to do then is you've just described Bill Monroe's Old Mailin', which is the title cut from that album, Lorraine Jordan and Carolina Road, which just was released last night for the release party on Pinecastle. I'm going to cut.
The CD was just released. You're correct. The single's been out since March.
And I've had it in play, but it's the whole CD now. People can get this whole thing in their hands. I'm going to play that title cut, but let's make sure you've mentioned it before where people can get this brand new CD, the whole thing. Bill Monroe's Old Mandolin from Lorraine Jordan, Carolina Road. You must have websites all over where you can get it.
Oh, yes. Well, you can get it from CarolinaRoadBand.com. Make sure you put the band in there, CarolinaRoadBand.com, and we've got a store where you can get the shirts, you can get the hats, you can get the CD, all about the mandolin this year. And then you can also go to Pinecastle Music, and they got it for sale. And also iTunes, Amazon, any of those places that you download music, everybody's got it.
And, of course, you mentioned they can come by the cafe.
Yeah, you can. You certainly can. Come by Lorraine's Coffee House and Music in Garner, North Carolina, 7 miles south of Raleigh. And also, we have a festival, Christmas in the Smokies, in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee.
That's right. That's your big. Yeah, that's a big thing.
That is a big thing. We've been putting 800 or so people in there. I'm sure it won't be like that again for a while, but it's a big thing. It's our festival, and it's in a beautiful city, Christmastown, USA, right at Christmas. And Paul Williams, Doyle Lawson, our co-host, and invite people to watch for that, Bluegrass Christmas in the Smokies.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, we're going to leave you alone, get back to your busy, busy day, and we're going to let the audience hear the title cut, Bill Monroe's Old Mandolin, which is, like you say, in the glass case. It's one of those things that, first of all, it's a great sounding instrument, but the history involved is just remarkable, because that's the man that really kind of, I think everybody has to say, started what's called bluegrass music, and that's the instrument that he did it with.
It is, Steve. And I want to give you a little tribute to leave the fans with.
Okay.
I want to thank the fans for tuning in, and I want everybody in Kentucky to know, I think they already know it, Kentucky is my second favorite state. And I'm a Kentucky Colonel because of some of the songs we put out.
Oh, good, good.
And and I ate at Kentucky Fried Chicken a lot, too. but every song, this is a tribute for you, every song that we've ever put out that made number one, and if Bill Monroe's Mandolin, it's number two in the nation now, but if it makes number one, it'll be the fourth one. Every song we've ever put out as a Carolina Road has talked about or has had input from Kentucky or been about Kentucky. So y'all been good to me, so thank you so much.
Well, let's hope this one gets number one, too. We'll hope this gets up to the top of the charts.
Well, hopefully it will, but it's done well. But I just want to thank the people of Kentucky,
because Kentucky
supports my music, and
I appreciate it. All right, well, I'm going to let you go, play for the audience that title cut, and then we'll look for you when things loosen up and we can get together somewhere out on the road, okay?
Okay, thank you, everybody.
All right.
Steve.
Thank you.